Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at symradio.com/live.
You're listening to 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio.
Live to a Monday night edition of Carson's Corner on Underground Progressive Radio, 5:30 a.m., Speak Your Mind Radio, and of course, streaming live on Blog Talk Radio. How are you, folks? My name is Bob Carson. 347-326-9749 is the number for you to be a part of the program. 347-326-9749. I got a million different things going on at once, so please forgive me. And we've got the chat room open, so anybody that wants to come into the chat room, they got questions, comments, or concerns, I will be in the chat room all throughout this evening. We will be with you for the next hour or so. And we have a very, very special guest. This is the first Occupy Wall Street member that we've had on the show. I've been reaching out to some local chapters here in central New Jersey, and to be honest with you, I've been kind of disappointed with their responses. Some of the people in Freehold, where I'm from, central Jersey, are just not willing to go on the air. They're kind of shy about coming on the air, and we need all the exposure that we can get. You know, we are facing an uphill battle here. We've got the corporate-driven media that wants to, in my opinion, obliterate the Occupy movement. They are adversarial to our goals. They are adversarial to the policies that benefit the 99%. And so, you know, the press coverage is going to be accordingly. That's why I tell you, people that listen, the thousands of people that listen to this show, bypass corporate media, tune into shows like Carson's Corner, support Occupy Wall Street groups all across the country, and support independent media. It's very, very important to do that. Our guest is from Occupy Wall Street. You can visit their website at Occupy Wall Street, and street is st.org, so that's Occupy Wall st.org. And I'm going to try to pronounce his name. I'm probably going to wind up butchering it because I'm just terrible with names. Karanja Gakuchi, I hope I am pronouncing his name, joins us live here on Carson's Corner. Karanja, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Yes, you totally butchered it. It's Karanja Gakuchi.
I knew I was going to do that, man. And you know what? I did my diligence, too. I tried to go on YouTube and see if there was some sort of interview where somebody correctly pronounces your first and last name. I apologize for that, but it's great to have you on the show. And, you know, like I said, you're the first member of Occupy Wall Street to be on this program. Well, actually, the second member. We have Jeff Howard on. He's a member of Occupy Wall Street, New Haven, Connecticut. But you're the real, first real grassroots activist and someone that has done a lot in terms of activism. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me and for having us as a movement.
Absolutely, we're all part of the same movement, in my opinion. We as wage slaves, as workers, whatever you want to call us, laborists, we are essentially being dictated, immobilized by the same economic policies that our country has really gone full force with over the last 30 years. And so, we have a lot of Tea Party people out there that are just, they're anti-government, they're this and that. But you know what really kills me is that these people have a lot in common with the Occupy protesters.
I've been talking about that myself lately because we absolutely agree. We are aggrieved by the same things. We've raised hell over the same things, which is the bank bailouts primarily, and all the money going to corporations instead of to people. But somehow, and this is the insidious link of the corporate media, they have managed to actually get a bunch of people who actually agree with us to believe that the solutions are the exact opposite of what would actually help workers. That handing yet more tax cuts to corporations, yet more breaks, yet more deregulation to corporations is the answer to the issues they raise. And one thing I do is I definitely respect the corporate media and their backers, the likes of the Kochs.
Yep, exactly. And it's because it's that, because we have the goals that we do, because we essentially want higher taxes on corporations. Say corporations in America are paying next to nothing in taxes. We have the second lowest tax burden for corporate America of any other industrialized country. And because we want to regulate the financial institutions, we want to regulate corporations, naturally, there, as I said, there's an adversarial relationship between the occupiers and the corporate media. And, what really bothers me is, I know a lot of libertarians out there, and I know that there are a lot of Tea Party people out there, and they're all talking about how bad the government is and that they view the government as the problem. But what these people, I think they don't realize, or I think they take for granted, is the fact that they all depend on the United States government. Business is a creation of the United States government. Business is allowed to operate in a certain way that attracts investors and both foreign and domestic, that gives its CEOs limited liabilities because of the United States government. And that's the thing, is that we all depend on government, so let's make government work for the people as opposed for the very wealthy and the corporations. I mean, the issue is not with the functions of government. The issue is with money that is corrupted government. I mean, isn't that one of the key messages of the occupiers out there?
Well, not only is it that people are dependent on government, we are the government. We make the government. It is from our taxes that government is formed and operates. So rather than trying to destroy or eliminate government, which is obviously something that's not going to happen, because these same people who are very opposed to the government are very pro-military, by the way, and
right.
very pro-police and you know, and all the other uniformed services of the government. You know, it's important to remember that we are the government. It is our taxes that make the government. And therefore, what we need to do is, yes, make government better. Yes, it's not perfect. Yes, there are a lot of issues. Yes, there's a lot of waste. But let's make it better. I mean, there's a lot of waste in corporations, too.
Right.
And what they do is periodically they bring in consultants and pay them lots of money and have them fix that waste, fix whatever problems they're having. We can do the same with government. The way government operates, can be improved. But it's not about, but we are the government. So it is up to us to
We are the government. We are the government, and we have the ability to change or vote out our elected officials. We don't have recourse over Wall Street. You know, I seem to remember in 2008, Wall Street through a 10, or if you want to go back to Ronald Reagan, when Reagan deregulated the SNLs, it was Wall Street that pushed for deregulation, starting with the repeal of Glass-Steagall, to the Commodities Futures Modernization Act, which banned the regulation of derivatives. And they basically had all these private losses. All these investment firms went bankrupt, as you know, and this really started the worldwide recession. And they walked over to Congress and got basically an $800 billion welfare check, not including what the Federal Reserve spent bailing out the banks all across the world. And, you know, the thing is that, here we are 4 years later, CEO salaries are just through the roof. $11 million, something like that, is what the average CEO is being paid. Corporations, their profits are through the roof. And they're operating basically as they were prior to 2008. And these banks are bigger. And you know what? We have no recourse over them. We have absolutely, there's no way we can vote out our Wall Street CEO. There's no way that we could, go after the crooks that were selling bad mortgage-backed securities, subprime mortgages, fill in the blank. And another point I want to make up, Karanja, is that we talk about spending, and this is the big issue in 2010. It's sort of the Occupy Wall Street protests have really put an end, I think, to a lot of the discussion on spending. People have to understand what we're spending money on. When we say spending, one of the two contributors to our deficits each year, our deficit each year, is tax cuts. We've dramatically cut taxes for the wealthy over the last 10 years, but really over the last 30 years, to the point now where we have something like 22% less revenue coming into the government from 2001. And also, we've increased military spending. Since 1997, our military budget has doubled or tripled. We're spending more money than every other industrialized country combined on defense spending. So these two things are really driving up our deficit. Plus, you've got corporate welfare running amok. And it doesn't seem like the Tea Party people are too concerned about the money that's going to corporations and the low taxes that millionaires and billionaires are paying at all of our expenses. But yet they seem to want to hone in on entitlement programs. They want to hone in on welfare, as if this government is spending a lot of money on welfare. Why do you think that is?
Well, again, it goes back to what I was talking about earlier with regard to the corporate media, because I do believe that even the so-called left-wing, the so-called famous left-wing media doesn't really exist. And you have to remember that even channels like MSNBC are owned by GM and Comcast,
mm-hmm.
Corporations. It is not in their interest to really break it down exactly what tax cuts mean. So when the average rank-and-file member of the Tea Party hears tax cuts, what they're thinking is that their taxes are going to be lower. In fact, the GOP have made it very clear that they do not intend to lower taxes for the average you and me, working Joe, in future. They've been talking about understanding. This is their coded language, and the corporate media helps them with this language. They've been using the language of expanding the tax base. What does expanding the tax base mean? Expanding the tax base, according to the GOP, actually means raising the taxes of people who currently are too poor to pay taxes. And they've been pushing this idea about this percentage that they've been quoting. I think they've been saying as high as 40% of people don't pay taxes. There's nobody, first of all, that works in this country that doesn't pay some sort of tax. You pay sales tax.
Right.
Everybody pays Social Security tax, including the very poor. And by the way, the very wealthy only pay Social Security tax on their first 108,000. So it is completely regressive. It's not, you don't have to pay Social Security tax at any higher rate, even if you're making billions, millions, hundreds of thousands, or billions. And going back to what you were talking about with regard to deregulation, it is precisely those acts that Reagan repealed, that turned around with like Glass-Steagall, and the attack on the commodities and futures. I forget what the body is called. Trading Commission, correct. That led to specifically to the actual financial issues that we now have, where banks have access to your deposits, to your
right.
mortgage, to every bank deposit that you have to trade with, essentially to gamble with. And these are the exact problems that we are having today. And the Republican proposals are to do yet more of it. And so to the average rank-and-file individual who supports the Tea Party, I mean, they're being exploited by the Tea Party politicians and the Republicans. There's no doubt about it. And they're being exploited with the help of the corporate media. When Republicans talk about spending, they use very pretty language to leave it not very clear as to what they're talking about, because when they talk about government spending, I think the image that people have is that you have, you know, Democrats, you have Obama, for example, you know, spending money on Air Force One with, I don't know, champagne or something. But, you know, spending is on us. It is on Medicaid, on Medicare.
It is
the spending that goes to the military. And you cannot, and what the Republicans did over the last 10 years, they raided the Treasury. Not just over the last 10 years, actually, over the last 30 years. Since raided,
30 years, yeah.
They raided the Treasury and have been trying to make the Treasury broke. And then at the same time, raising spending on needless wars, it's unsustainable. You cannot raid the Treasury and still have the government function. So, of course, we now have the budget crisis. And now, after creating those crises, they turn around and they claim that spending is the problem. And the cuts that they want to institute exclude defense.
Right,
and
yeah.
They include everything that the average Joe depends
That's
on.
Right,
that's
because
Pell Grant, it's
yep.
Medicare, Medicaid.
Because of the balance of power, that's why there's a huge lobbying power, obviously, as you know, behind the fence dollars. There's a huge lobbying power, when it comes to corporate subsidies. I mean, we could just go down the line, and it's the average working American that doesn't have a voice in Washington D.C. that unfortunately is asked to fit the bill. It's really unfortunate. I want to get your take on where does Occupy – I mean, I know it's difficult. That there are different Occupy groups, and everybody has different opinions. But what is your opinion with regards to President Obama? Are you going to be out there canvassing for Obama and supporting him for the 2012 election?
Occupy as a movement is of the view that the political system is broken, and therefore Occupy as a movement has no real interest in sort of seeing Band-Aid solutions, and therefore is unlikely to back either candidate or even a Green Party candidate or what have you. I mean, many of us in Occupy worked for Obama the last time around, and so many individuals there are many of our partners are working on the left side of the political divide, and therefore, as individuals, I'm pretty sure that there are many people who obviously still will, you know, don't want to see. Most of us, I'm pretty sure, do not want to see Mitt Romney come in because, you know, we cannot afford more tax cuts. And he's talking
right.
about increasing tax cuts by a further 25%. That means a further raid on the Treasury of yet more money that the country and the government needs. And therefore, after that, the only discussion will be budget cuts. So we cannot afford that. And I'm definitely of the view that we cannot afford that. I would not want to see a Romney presidency. But Occupy the Movement has chosen not to get involved in the political process, choosing instead to push for more progressive issues, pushing for the removal of money from politics, getting money out of politics, trying to work toward pushing yet more for the repeal of Citizens United, which I guess, you know, there's hope yet. I mean, John Roberts was the vote that upheld the health care law. So, you know, Occupy the Movement chooses to continue fighting for those progressive things that we believe in. But individuals, I'm pretty sure, you know, are going to get involved as they see fit.
Yeah, I want to make it clear, too, that, you know, I'm one of the few progressive hosts out there. I mean, and I'm not broadcasting on a large scale by any means, but I'm one of the few voices out there that is not supporting President Obama and has just been completely disappointed with his performance. And that's another topic and for another show in itself. But I wanted to get your take on, because you were, if I'm not mistaken, you were born in Nigeria or Kenya?
In Kenya.
Okay, right. Okay. And of course, as you know, you know, Kenya has been a hot topic amongst the right wing in this country because Obama's father was born in Kenya, and in my opinion, we've really seen much of the, or at least some of the opposition towards President Obama has been driven by racism, and I could give you many examples of racism within the Tea Party. Not all Tea Party people are racist, don't get me wrong, but a significant percentage of them relative to the general population are racist. As someone from Kenya and you know, someone who has immigrated to the United States, what is your take on some of what we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years from the right wing in reference to opposition towards President Obama?
Well, I mean, yes, of course, it's absolutely deplorable, right? And it's more than, you know, I want to say it's unfortunate, but it really is more than unfortunate. It's deplorable. I do believe strongly that the elites that push for these means, because they go, you know, the people that push these means that have gone and done the research, they're wealthy, well-informed, highly educated, right-wing elites. And it is in their interest to keep the divide going between classes, between races, between the working poor, between union workers, between public and union, between the public unions and the private unions, because it is in their interest to maintain divisions, because when people come together and realize that they're on the same side, that they need to be on the same side, you know, then the corporations would be on the losing end. So it is in their interest to push these means. You know, even the rank and file, I do believe that many of their attitudes they hold primarily because they're being fed to them by the corporate media.
Okay, we're going to go to a phone caller now. Tea Party Paul, I believe his name is, from Arkansas. Paul, I know that you know, you've been in the chat room for a while, and there's a lot of things that you've written there. But just pick like one or two topics that you want to chime in here on, and you know, hopefully we can have a discussion here. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. How about yourself, Carson? And I appreciate you having a Blog Talk Radio show, because there's not many liberal Blog Talk Radio shows nowadays. And I love and always enjoy coming in and listening to them and calling in and talking with fellow Americans like yourself.
Well, you know what? I got to tell you, Paul, probably a majority of the people that listen to the show are conservative. I really think so, or at least half and half. So it's you know, we welcome all stripes. And this is – listen, you know, I'm a guy that shares his opinion, and – I know that my opinion could be offensive to other people, but I don't shy away from discussions and having, you know, debates or whatnot. So you're on the air with myself and Karanja. Your last name is Gakucha?
It's pronounced Gashusha.
Gashusha. Okay, I apologize.
Correct.
Okay. Paul, go ahead. Tell us.
I'll pose a couple questions to you, gentlemen. You answer them, and hopefully you'll let me respond.
Sure.
How do you believe that tax cuts add to the deficit? Okay, now, let's say in 2001 we were in a recession after September 11th when radical Muslims flew planes into buildings in the World Trade Center on 9/11 in New York City. Mm-hmm. We had a recession that followed after they hit our economic center in New York, there in Manhattan. George Bush doubled the income tax rate for child tax deductions. He went out there and lowered their lowest income tax bracket rate from 15 to 10%. Yes, he did lower the richest income tax bracket almost 3.5% during that particular time, but every single tax bracket got a tax cut. Now, I have never had a liberal explain to me how they believe that letting Americans keep their own money, keep the money that they earn, whether it's at their job or a second job like I have. I work 65 hours a week for the last 2 years. I work at a gas station on the weekends overnight, and I work at AT&T during the day. How do you believe that letting Americans keep their own money somehow adds to the deficit, when the government's ability to pay for itself is to serve the private sector? So if the private sector has more money, more ability to go out and buy those goods or services, and more ability to be a consumer, do you not believe more jobs are created when you have more consumers with more money in their pocket to go out there and spend that money at a particular good or service? Because then that company has to hire an extra person to sell that good or service, or stock that good or service, or drive it to the store.
Right, right. I'll respond to this initially, then Karanja, I'll give you the floor too. You're right. We are a consumer-driven economy. When workers have money to spend, the more money they have to spend, the more jobs are created. I think something like 70% of our economy is consumer-driven. Tax cuts, giving people an across-the-board tax cut, does not generate into income growth. History shows that when you raise taxes on the very wealthy, as was done in 1947, between 1947 and 1980, you know, when Dwight Eisenhower was in office, we had a 91% tax rate on the wealthy. Okay, corporations were paying
not for 30 years. Don't make 35. Go ahead.
35 to 40% of the cost of government were corporations were paying taxes. Now we have corporations and the very wealthy writing our tax code. And so it's no surprise that the government has seen a lack of tax revenue that has resulted in huge deficits. Whenever you give a tax cut to a millionaire, that millionaire has more than enough money than they know what to do with. They take that money and they invest it overseas. They invest it in Wall Street casinos, and that ends up driving up the deficit. The very definition of a deficit is the gap between spending and revenue. If you cut spend, if you increase spending and cut revenue, you're going to have a deficit. It's pure as day. So yeah, you mentioned George W. Bush, what he did. Whenever you give an across the board tax cut, wages in this country tend to go lower. It's just the bottom line. The workers will work for whatever the take home pay is, meaning whatever they get paid after taxes. And if you cut taxes, historically, you wind up driving down wages.
That's factually incorrect. You don't have a single fact or evidence that you can link me to that you know of to support the argument that workers go to a job and fill out an application or work for a certain employee because of their take home pay. No, when an employer goes,
sure they
when
do.
An employee goes to, no, they don't. When an employee goes to an employer, no matter what income tax bracket they came from, no matter what that job may be, whether it's digging ditches or selling cars or working at Bain Capital, for instance, they know a certain degree of what their taxes are going to be because of the state they live in. You have state income taxes, federal income taxes. Just like
right.
you guys said earlier in the show is, everybody pays taxes. Yes, we know
right.
that. What we talk about as conservatives or Tea Party members is almost 49% of people don't pay federal income tax. So when Barack Obama gets on stage and he says, well, we have roads, bridges, construction, this, that, if 49% of Americans don't contribute in any way because they pay no federal income tax, federal now, no federal income tax, how does that If you tell a business owner, well, other people helped you create that business, other people helped you make that business and helped
right.
you sell those products as consumers, how is that when 49% of the people don't even contribute to the system?
Well, first of all, the government is far more reliant on state and local taxes and payroll taxes, and those taxes are almost all of them are paid for by poor, working poor, and middle-class people. And number two, the reason why 49% of Americans don't pay any federal income taxes is because you've got half of income earners that earn less than $8,000 a year. Right now, our taxes...
Oh, whoa, name me somebody you know that makes less than $8,000 a year.
South. Go look at workers in North Carolina.
I live in Arkansas,
Okay, you have 50% of income earners, people that work. You realize that minimum wage laws in states like Arkansas or not Arkansas, but North Carolina and other Mississippi, they don't have to comply. Certain businesses don't have to comply with federal minimum wage standards. Like you can work in America
like
for like $5 or $6. And still be illegal because
they pay $3.50 to waiters and waitresses in our
yeah.
store. $3.50 now.
And I'm telling you, and I work for Walmart here, believe it or not. And Walmart, half of Walmart employees are on welfare because they don't make enough money to live. Now I want to go to Karanja. Do you want to respond to anything Tea Party Paul had to say?
Sure, Paul. I mean, you ask how the government, how cutting taxes leaves the government without money. Well, the government depends on taxes to fund the treasury. So when, you know, the Bush tax cut represents $400 billion taken out of the treasury every 4 years. So even without discussing the merit of the tax cut or anything, that is $400 billion taken away each year from the treasury, and then you throw in the wars, which cost about the same amount, about three, you know, I forget exactly how much, but it's hundreds of billions a year.
So you can go to costofwar.com, it gives you an exact amount, but go ahead.
Right. So when you couple in removing $400 billion a year from the treasury, and then you add on to that expenses of the war, the compounding effect is about a $500 billion hole every year. And, you know, the government does rely on us. We are the government. We are the ones that fund the treasury. So you cannot raid the treasury and leave it without any money and still expect the government to function. What does government do? What does government spend that money on? It spends it on defense. I'm sure you're pro-defense. So how do you propose that we go to these wars while still giving away money? And, you know, you can discuss the merits of the tax cuts, particularly for people who are in the lower income bracket. But to tell me that somehow giving Walmart and people like Mitt Romney and President Obama yet more tax cuts, that it's going to stimulate the economy, it's just not the case. Mitt Romney is not going to buy another house. He's not going to buy another car. He probably
right.
already has enough houses in every state. He has about 8, I believe. You know, he's not going to go shopping because he's gotten a tax cut. That's the reality. So that has no, you know, giving a tax cut to very wealthy millionaires has no zero stimulative effect on the economy because they do not go out and spend that money because they don't need to. They spend based on their choice, not because they've gotten a little extra money. So that's a falsehood. That
and we're also a global economy too. So don't forget, you know, it's not like when Reagan came in, we were less. We weren't really. Reagan really kicked the door off of lowering tariff barriers. And we were a vastly different society once Ronald Reagan came in. We never had trillion-dollar deficits once Ronald Reagan came in. We never had certainly a trillion-dollar debt. And Reagan came in and slashed taxes on the very wealthy. He waged war against organized labor and an increased defense spending. And then when Reagan left, we had a $3 trillion national debt. And we've never paid off Reagan's debt before, and we've continued Reaganomics. You see, Paul, I'm not a knee-jerk, you know, and I'm not suggesting Karanja is at all, or anybody from the Occupy movement is, but I'm not a professional progressive pundit that, you know, is interested in who's in the White House or you know, a knee-jerk, an Obama supporter. I criticize President Obama, and I'm not voting for President Obama in 2012 because Obama, for all his talk about the deficit, you know, this and that, Obama has contributed a lot of money to the deficit by continuing the same policies that we have continued as a government, maybe with the exception with Bill Clinton, because Bill Clinton raised taxes marginally on the wealthy and cut defense spending, as every single president in the last 30 years. So, you know, this is, in my opinion, this is a problem of capital. It's a problem of money organizing around our politicians and preventing our politicians to legislate on behalf of, as you say, the private sector. It's not the fact that we have a government. Now, would you agree with that statement, or do you think it's the government, it's the functions of government that are just bad and messing this whole thing up?
Well, we'll go down this one by one, and I understand I'm going to let you guys talk. You're letting me speak on your show, and I appreciate that to
You're
the
welcome.
Utmost. Now, like your other gentleman said, he said, well, how do you believe that taxes on the wealthy, that they're going to go out and buy houses? Mitt Romney has 8 houses. Well, Mitt Romney started Bain Capital in 1984 all on his own. From 1984 to 1999, this was a company that he started and he founded, and he got investors and venture capitalists that put their money into such companies such as Staples before they even had their first store open. Now they have over 800 stores around the United States and employ 70,000 people. Now, me, you said work for Walmart. Sam Walton. He opened a discount retailer in Stuttgart, Arkansas. He walked around Stuttgart, Arkansas to each individual citizen with his own 2 rubber shoes and
mm-hmm.
got $1,000 here, $500 here, $2,000 here from these different individuals to invest in his own company. He started Walmart. Now it's the largest private employer in the United States of America. These are people like Alexander Graham Bell and AT&T, who
yeah.
I work for, who made the infrastructure in the United States to have telephone lines. Telephone lines not only sped up consumer goods and products, but they made businesses where they can interact with each other. Also, citizens or residents where they can interact with each other.
Well,
we have
yeah.
Bill Gates, who sat in the garage and made Microsoft. Microsoft Now, Microsoft Word, Microsoft Office, Excel, PowerPoint is used in almost every single business and every single corporation or office, whether it's a small business or a large business in the United States of America. These are inventors, creators, and entrepreneurs. So,
and they did it with the United States government. Sam Walton, Walmart relied
what?
On a stream of government subsidies. Are you kidding me?
Like what? Tell me
like,
what?
Like
mm-hmm.
pocketing sales taxes. Walmart worked out a
what?
Deal with the federal government where they didn't have to pay sales taxes. David K. Johnson
no,
wrote about this in his book. Yes, they did. Go look
no,
at David
didn't.
K. Johnson.
Sam
he's a Pulitzer.
Sam Walton,
he's a Pulitzer.
Sam Walton paid taxes
Paul.
Every single year of his.
Paul,
I knew, people who knew Sam. Go ahead, sir.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Sam Walton depended on a stream of government subsidies to create Walmart. I'll give you an example. For 10 years, okay, David K. Johnson, the Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter, chronicled that from 10 years, from 1991 to 2001, I believe were the years, Sam Walton paid $100 million in sales taxes, which is the equivalent of 1 penny off of every $100 that he makes. There's not a private citizen in America that pays that low percentage of taxes, number one. Number two, Sam Walton depended on the United States government to train his employees. Did you know that one-third of Walmart buildings across America are subsidized by the United States government? Did you know that? 50% of Walmart employees are on welfare right now.
That's
not a lie. But, Paul,
yes,
the
is.
Point is, you're right.
Link
Sam
us
Walton,
in the chat room to that fact. But go ahead.
I have it on my Facebook page. Paul, the point is Sam Walton is a smart guy and was a hard worker, absolutely. But he did it with the help of the United States government. And you mentioned Bill Gates. How do you think he started Microsoft? Bill Gates started Microsoft because the government invests $90 billion each year in new technologies. Bill Gates Sr. is on record as saying my son could never have started Microsoft if it wasn't for the United States government. Bill Gates Sr. was a World War
I,
one,
that
a World War
I
veteran.
Hear that.
And also Bill Gates Sr., He put his son through college by using the GI Bill. His mother was a public teacher. His mother passed away. His mother was a public teacher. Bill Gates started Microsoft because of the United States government. How do you think
Bill Gates never finished college? What are you talking about, putting through college with the GI Bill? He never finished college.
You cannot push back against everything.
Walmart was started in 1976. He's talking about from 1991 to 2001, they only paid $100 million in taxes. Link me to that fact. Well, they only paid $100 million in sales tax
David,
to the federal government
at
Walmart. When they started the business
in
1976.
It's called David K. Johnson's book,
yes,
Free
sir.
Lunch. He talks about how Walmart got free land deals, other deals that are not available to regular citizens. He talked about Walmart pays nothing in taxes each year. Zero.
If the Walmart store – now, let me ask you this, Carson. We're discussing here, guys.
No problem.
Walmart opens a store on a public land, okay, let's say you have states nowadays, let's say Chris Christie, New Jersey, where you're from, or we have Bobby Jindal in Louisiana, or Mike Beebe, a Democrat here in Arkansas. If we have them go out and say, hey, in order for FedEx to come to Little Rock Airport, which my cut could be messed up, and they ended up going to Memphis, we're going to give you a tax break to come and create jobs here. Because guess what? If you give them a tax break in that particular city or that county or that state to come and build their particular factory or build their retail store or so on and so forth, in that particular state, then guess what? Those employees have a job.
No,
so you believe in people
divide,
not having a job or people having a job?
Paul, divide – I'm going to throw it to Karanja here. Paul, divide the amount of money that we spend subsidizing corporations relative to the jobs they create, and you will see that that money that we're spending subsidizing these corporations is going right into the CEO's pocket. I'll give you an example. Here in New Jersey, Governor Christie gave $90 million to Goya, okay, the bean company, for six jobs. Well, do the math. You think those six jobs are worth, you know, millions of dollars? No. The money went to the CEOs. The money went to the executives. And that's the bottom line. When you subsidize corporations like Walmart, who are already sitting on top of record profits, that money essentially goes to the CEOs and goes to the executives. You wanted to respond?
Sure. Paul, I mean, I don't know if you're suggesting that somehow because these corporations create jobs that therefore
I'm talking about any
never,
corporation.
That it's not paying taxes at
Walmart,
all. At this moment, you spoke and we let you speak, so please let me answer.
Yes, sir.
Corporations at this very moment are sitting on $4 trillion in profits.
Yes,
they are still there are upwards of 15 million Americans that are unemployed right now. So if tax cuts and if providing corporations with tax cuts and all these government subsidies in order that they can have money in their bank accounts should lead to job creation, then why are they sitting on $4 trillion when we have this high unemployment rate? So it's not about, you know, we're not in the business of bashing corporations simply because they're corporations. What we are arguing is that corporations need to pay a fair share of their taxes because the government of the United States cannot give subsidies, cannot give research and development subsidies, cannot run defense, cannot run, cannot provide money to the states to help keep firehouses open without collecting taxes. The government has to run somehow. The government is the go-to organization when it's our roads, when it's our bridges. It's the government that looks after those. Our airports. How do you expect the government to run without when the Republicans are raiding the government treasuries to hand it to corporations, and those corporations, in turn, they take that money and spend it in China on their plants there. It's a global economy, so they're not tied down to producing in the United States anymore. So they're not creating jobs in the United States because they're going where the wages are lowest, where the costs are lowest. And the government has continued providing the same level of subsidies in the form of actually sometimes government actual grants, like actual government dollars, or tax cuts. So I'm saying if we're going to move to a international globalized type economy where corporations have no requirement to be loyal at all to the United States, then they don't need those R&D subsidies. They don't need those grants. They don't need those tax cuts. Let them pay a fair tax level. We have General Electric, for example, which was paid $3 billion at the end when they finished their tax returns last year, because they owed nothing, because there are all these loopholes for corporations in this country. The tax rate for corporations is about something in the 30%, but no corporation is paying that because there are all these loopholes that have been thrown in by their lobbyists on Capitol Hill. You and I, Paul, we are on the same side. We are being screwed over by these corporations. Say one more time.
I don't believe we're being screwed over, but nonetheless, go ahead.
Well, when you raid the treasury and you're left, and the government is no longer able to provide subsidies that were helping you pay the colleges, for example, provide Pell grants to, I don't know if you have kids that are, that might be going to college. Those tax cuts, that's what they go for. That's where they're taken from. They're taken from the subsidies that go to colleges. That means college tuition is rising. That means Pell grants are being taken away and other scholarships and grants that go to college kids. That means that education money is being taken out of education. And we're increasingly moving to an economy that is knowledge based, and with lower education standards, we cannot compete with kids from Asia, from China, from India. So that's where that money comes from. It doesn't come from the president's own pocket. You know, when you starve the government of money, it's not somehow going to affect Democrats in Capitol Hill. They're all wealthy people. The people it affects are you and me. It is me having to pay more in my health care costs. It's me having to pay more for my premiums in my health insurance. That's where that money comes from.
Yes.
Well, okay, yeah, well said. And I just want to, you know, just kind of ask you a question here, Paul. You said you don't believe that corporations are screwing us over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my exact quote. Yes, sir.
Okay, right.
When I run for office, you can use that against me.
Yeah, well, listen, I want no business in politics at all, but or even I could speak out against politicians, but I mean, how do you explain 2008? I mean, how do you explain, you know, Wall Street issuing these subprime mortgage loans, which they knew were pieces of crap, which they did because they were incentivized by AIG.
Yeah, we both agree on that.
Yeah, and then Wall Street.
Who were they backed by?
What do you mean?
Who were these adjustable rate mortgages, and no money down loans to the FHA? Who were they backed by?
They were backed by
federal government.
Investment bankers.
Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the federal government.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac weren't in the derivatives market until late 2006, 2007. They were late to the game. The whole thing started in 2001. But what happened was the investment banks sold.
It started in 1999 with the reinvestment, the Community Reinvestment Act.
Yeah, with the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which was pushed by Alan Greenspan, who's a worshiper of Ayn Rand. Bill Clinton and his clan, Larry Summers, Laura Tyson, all these guys, they're advising President Obama. So you're not going to get me to say that this is just a Republican problem.
No, I didn't say it. Just like he said earlier, he was like, well, General Electric and so on and so forth. And General Electric sent all these jobs to Mexico. Yeah, he is Barack Obama's job czar.
Jeffrey Mills. But what I was saying is that the investment bankers took these mortgages, they bundled them up, they sold them to investors. Investors would pay AIG for a premium, would back these mortgages up in case the people that took out the mortgages couldn't pay. And guess what? AIG didn't have any money to pay for these mortgages because AIG was unregulated. The government said... AIG was unregulated.
Why did these companies buy these mortgage derivatives and these packages? Because the United States government
were
backed them.
Because of deregulation, these things were illegal.
No,
regulated.
The government
in 2001
Carson,
with the Commodity Futures Modernization Act that banned the regulation of derivatives. Then we saw $600 trillion derivatives markets,
Carson,
which was unregulated. Yeah,
Carson, who backed the derivatives?
Don't lie to your audience because they can look it up on Google.
AIG backed the derivative.
The federal government. No,
and,
the federal
and the
government backed these derivatives.
The rating
AIG bought every derivative, right? Is that what you're saying?
There's a couple different insurance companies.
Let me explain this to you because I actually worked on Wall Street and I happened to work on money-backed securities.
Okay.
I worked in money-backed
securities.
I thought
y'all were going to let me respond real quick because he just got done talking like a minute ago. I thought y'all were going to let me respond to what he said first and foremost.
Let Karanja go and then you'll respond.
Go ahead. That's fine.
Well, so first of all, mortgage-backed securities and the FHA backing of mortgages are two completely separate things. The mortgage foreclosure crisis, which is still going on right now, is completely separate and has less to do with the actual financial collapse. What led to the financial collapse is mortgage-backed securities. Mortgage-backed securities were backed by AIG, not the government, and not really backed by AIG, but insured by AIG because these are private products. Now, the mortgage-backed securities led to a collapse of the financial system because there's $16 trillion worth of mortgage-backed securities. The banks sold far more in securities than the whole of the U.S. economy combined, than the whole U.S. GDP combined. And therefore, what happened in 2008 is as soon as it appeared that there was going to be crises in the mortgage business, banks started demanding payment of their derivatives back from each other, and that's what led to the crisis. It was a crisis created purely by banks because bankers were selling far more personal paper than they could. What do you mean that's not correct? I worked in mortgage securities, sir. I'm telling you exactly how it went. And government does not back
what
derivatives.
Company did you work
derivatives
for?
Are provided for derivatives, securities products that are created by banks, and they're derived. That's where the word comes from. They're derived from real products, from real stock or
derived
products.
From real investments in those particular private institutions, yes.
Correct.
Right.
$600 trillion worth of those out there in the market, and there simply isn't enough assets on the planet to cover derivatives. So that has nothing to do with the FHA or the U.S. government. Those are simply products that are created by the banks, that have been traded by the banks, and that are causing the current state of uncertainty in the financial markets because all the banks know that everybody is holding way too much in derivatives paper that nobody has money to pay for.
Yeah, and don't forget, certain state governments bought these toxic assets too. You know, like Ohio and other state governments. And it wound up when these things turned bad. We had a lot of corrupt and toxic assets on the books. But you know, here's the thing:
Carson, I will donate. I will pay for your Blog Talk Radio shit for a year if you want me to. Just let me speak on your show so I can get the truth out. Anything I ever say on your show, I want everybody to go to Google.com. Bing.com, Metacrawler.com, research for themselves. This is how Tea Party members and conservative people like myself are. Please research. Yes, I can debate against somebody who says, I worked in the financial derivatives industry. Well, what company did you work for? When? Can I look up your name? Can you show me your tax returns like Mitt Romney? This is what we get to. You guys keep talking about, well, government this, government that. Well, just like he said earlier, your guy from Michael Wall Street, student loans have went up 9% this year compared to 3% the year before and the year before that. So why did the government get into student loans? Why do we have Sallie Mae, so on and so forth, into student loans and the government coming into student loans and saying, we're going to pay these public institutions X amount of dollars. So those public institutions raise those tuition rates. So now we'll get back to derivatives. These derivatives didn't just come out of midair. These derivatives and these packages that they bundled up and sold to each other and sold to AIG and sold to the federal government, which the federal government backed at the time in 2006, just like you said, because the Community Reinvestment Act of 1999. We can sell mortgages to people who can't afford them. We still have people now to this day at my job that have bought houses that did not put a down payment down on that house that work at AT&T making $32,000 a year. Who do you think can afford a house at a $700-$800 payment a month, make it $32,000 a year? Why did they not have to put any money down? Why did they not have to show their financial disclosure statements? Why did they have to show how much I've made for three or four years? Why is there? That is what led to this.
Because of the securitization chain. That's why. When you went into a bank 30 years ago, even 20 years ago, whatever, when you went into a bank, that bank paid a lot of attention of who you were. They did their diligence because you were paying that bank back, and it took decades to pay that bank back, sometimes 10, 20, 30.
Which they're doing again now,
okay.
Carson. We both know. They're doing
now,
really, really
what happened
crucial
was,
now. Yeah.
What happened was because of the securitization chain was created in 1999, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which separated commercial investment banks, and the Commodities Futures Modernization Act of 2001, which banned the regulation of derivatives, which Brooks-Lee-Bourne and the Clinton administration was trying to regulate. Now when you go into a bank and you get a loan.
Hold on now.
Now,
Republican senators in the Bush administration from 2002 to 2006 14 times tried to regulate the derivatives.
No, they
didn't.
They cut the SEC staff to a staff of one, and they ignored warnings from the FBI. Bush was complicit in this. But what happened was now when you go to a bank, that bank takes your mortgage. They put you in a subprime mortgage because that's where they make most of the money. They take that mortgage. They don't care about your ability to pay because they're going to get paid regardless from the investment banks who in turn sell them to investors. And then they get a AAA rating, and they sell these all across the world. And that's why people got into mortgages that they found were exploding. 1 month their payment would be $3,000. The next month their payment would be $6,000. And they couldn't afford it because of a lack
of standards. That's a lie. You just exaggerated. Whose payment went from $300 to $6,000? Maybe one person, United States of America,
actually had families right here in New York that have had their mortgage payments double from $300 to $6,000.
One more point about the Community Reinvestment Act. Most of the mortgages, 90% of the mortgages that were defaulted were outside of the jurisdiction of the Community Reinvestment Act. The Community Reinvestment Act was created because they didn't want banks to, quote, redline. If a minority was in a poor district and he was qualified, the banks would disqualify him based on the city he was from. That's why. Most of the mortgages were outside. They were called ninja loans made by shadow banks. And they defaulted because they were not regulated. Now,
Now, if you have, let me here. I'll let you go in just a second, 30 seconds. If you have 10 mortgages out there that are just for rate mortgages, where they go from $400 to maybe $1,200, that person can afford that $1,200 payment. They get foreclosed on. They can't afford their home. Okay, they no longer have the money in their pocket to go out and buy that good or service at a particular product. So that service station that they used to go to every morning to buy cigarettes from. They lost their home. They're trying to pay their mortgage. They're trying to catch up on their particular mortgage. They no longer have the ability to buy a soda, a cigarette, or a honey bun at the gas station, or go to Walmart and buy $200 in groceries. Instead of buying $100 in groceries, putting that other $100 towards their mortgage, they lose their home. Do you not think that affects the middle class? Because the middle class goes out there and they say, okay, well, my wife works at Walmart. My wife works at a convenience store. No longer does she have a job because there's not as many people coming in and buying that good or service or that product.
Because
I think it's a chain reaction.
Tea Party, Paul, it's a combination thing. Wages are not going up in America. Okay, people, debt has replaced paychecks. That's number one. Workers are uncertain because of the Federal Reserve's job is to keep workers uncertain. We could have a whole thing.
20% of Americans pay 78% of the taxes, for
not
God's sake. Now, tell me. Yes, it is. Look it up. Go to Google.com and research it. Type
Google,
it in.
That's a right-wing talking point.
Google's lying.
1% of income earners pay about 30% of all the taxes, but they make
1% of income earners pay 17%
of all
federal income taxes.
All of the income growth is going with the top 1%, my friend. So you have 1%.
Give me the numbers so we can Google it. So your listeners can Google it.
The bottom line is that the top 1% only pay 15% of their income in taxes, and that's a problem because the rest of us pay 30% of our income. So I'd be quite happy to pay hundreds of millions in taxes if I was making billions every year. I don't care about, you know. So the amount is a misleading figure, suggesting how
so
much
should you,
percentage
should you,
of taxes
should you
they pay.
Should you force onto somebody who makes money to give more of their money up just because you believe you would pay hundreds of millions if you had trillions? You pay hundreds of millions into taxes.
No.
Do you believe
you're not listening
you,
to me because
you have
you're so tied
you
to your talking points. Listen to me for a second. What I say is that they pay only 15% of their taxes because most millionaires and billionaires, their primary income comes from capital gains, and only 15% is taxed.
And
so my issue is the percentage of income. You and I pay 30% of our income, 30+% of our income in taxes.
I pay 14%.
How much?
What are you talking about, 30%? I pay 14% here in Arkansas. My income tax last year was 14% of my total income. So stop giving out the incorrect number.
Well, I pay 30-something percent because I do not make enough to be my income comes from salary, not from capital gains. The majority of millionaires and billionaires pay their income on their capital gains, people like Mitt Romney, and that is only taxed at 15%. And the majority of Americans
who
pay taxes pay a rate at 30+%. And all I'm saying is millionaires and billionaires should be paying 30+% like everybody else.
Well, let me ask you this on capital gains real quick. Go ahead, Clark.
Yeah, we're gonna actually. I'm going to make this one point, and then we're going to go to you, and then we're going to have to hang up here. We're just running out of time. But you mentioned that why should somebody give back? Why should somebody have to give back taxes, and why should millionaires have to pay more taxes? The reason why is because for the last 30 years, we've allowed the Chamber of Commerce and groups like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, to write tax laws. These groups represent the very wealthy. They represent corporations. So our tax code is specifically designed to punish people like myself and yourself, take money, closely monitor the money that we make through earned income, whether it's through a wage or salary at our job, and let the business owner or the capital gains person pay next to nothing in taxes. Capital gains taxes, in some cases, capital gains investment bankers, people like John Paulson or, you know, fill in the blank, these guys pay zero in federal income taxes. What happens is, Paul, when millionaires and billionaires pay less in federal income taxes, we all pay more. We all have to make up the difference. And it's wrong. Even Ronald Reagan was against millionaires and billionaires paying a higher effective tax rate than bus drivers. It's wrong. And that's what one of the things that – so it's not punishing or giving back. We live in a country. Our infrastructure, the United States government, made their success possible. Business people wouldn't do business in America if they didn't have certain privileges from the United States government. And that's why they pay taxes. It's like if you live in an apartment complex, do you pay a maintenance fee? Yes, because you need someone to take out the trash. You need someone to shovel the driveway or the sidewalk. You need someone to saw. And that is why we pay taxes. Taxes are a patriotic thing. The question is, who's paying the taxes? And you look at corporations and the very wealthy, you've got 25% of millionaires paying no taxes. The tax burden gets shifted on to everybody else. There's no reason why someone like myself who works at Walmart should be paying 15% of all of his income, all the money I make, when yet someone like Mitt Romney pays 0%. It's wrong. Make your last point, and then we're going to move on, please.
Well, you have no proof that Mitt Romney paid 0% in taxes, but nonetheless, I understand you pay 15%. I pay 40%. Last year in my particular taxes. So we have to understand that. Why do you believe that? Is it jealousy? I don't understand what liberals and progressives. Is it jealousy of people who are successful and make millions of dollars?
It's economic fairness, and it's living in a country
where you believe if you pay 15%. Hold on, Carson.
Okay.
You said you would let me talk.
Yeah, go ahead.
You said because you pay 15%, so you believe that somebody who makes a dollar more than you should pay 16%?
No.
Do you believe somebody who makes
$2
more than you should pay 17%?
We're talking about people that make millions of dollars make more than 99%.
Yes, we know the top 1% pay 17% of all income tax. The
and
top
that's 20%
pay 70+% of all income tax.
Well, they make 25% of all the federal income taxes.
Do you,
so,
do
yeah,
you
they
think?
Pay seven, but they make all.
Did they make this
the
out of thin air?
Yeah, they,
did you
they
give
made,
them that money?
Did they work?
Yes,
did they
you
make
did,
it?
Because you
no.
went out and you bought their product at the store.
They
if
don't.
Bill,
they're not
if,
job
if,
creators.
If,
they don't
hold
make
on,
any
if,
money.
If Sam Walton makes
people,
a Walmart, Carson, and
people,
he makes money from you as an employee at Walmart, and
very,
you buy stuff at Walmart,
wealthy,
you give that
no.
money to Sam
very,
Walton.
Well, so
Sam Walton made his millions off of your back because.
You know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I kept him on for so long, Karanja. But you know, look, you just see the almost. Level of fanaticism. What I was trying to say to him is that when 1% of the income earners in America have gotten all of the income growth, okay? So you have the top 10% of income earners that earn 90% of all the income, okay? that they should be paying all the federal income taxes because they're getting all of the income growth, whereas people like you and I are getting no income growth. Okay, we've been working at flat wages for the last 30 years, and you know, we're paying more in state and local taxes. He doesn't understand. You can't let these guys, they don't want to let you finish at all.
It's unfortunate because it's so clear that he's so tied and married to his talking point in such a fanatical way. He's not able to hear. He's not able to hear us. Actually, I don't think that he could hear us because I don't think he's able to actually process that when somebody is paying 15% or 0% of their income, regardless if the top 1% are paying 78% of the taxes, they're making 90% of the income. So of course their portion of payment of taxes is higher. The problem is not the portion of the actual total sum that they put into the tax pot. It is the fact that they pay so low as a percentage of their income. It's not fair.
Right.
It doesn't. It is, and it cannot, and the country cannot be sustained that way.
That's
and
right.
Now, and his talking points about 49% of Americans not paying taxes, which is a load of garbage, because we all pay sales tax. We
right.
all pay what is it called? Payroll taxes. We all pay taxes. So, but they're so married to this idea, and somehow, when he has no answer, he resorts to questioning whether it's jealousy, questioning whether he can find me on Google and which companies I work for. I'm a private citizen.
That's
I don't need to release anything, any information to anybody. I'm not running
that's
for
right.
president.
Yeah, he just, you know, and should somebody making a dollar more be paying more in taxes? No,
it's
all
a completely nonsensical
exactly.
question and statement.
I know, and it's like, you know, look, I mean, I tried to be cordial to the guy. I left him on for 45 minutes or so, and you know, he would not listen to reason. And look, it's unfortunate, but you know, this is what we're dealing with here, and I guess no amount of facts or you know, no amount of evidence is going to convince this individual. But listen, the tax code is the core of our democracy. It really is, and I'm trying to, you know, explain to him that, you know, if you have, like, for example, over the last 30 years, that the effective tax rate for the very wealthy has gone down to 16%, and everybody else's taxes has gone up, you know, and that has an effect. There's a cause and effect relationship, and it just deteriorates our society. Well, listen, it's been great having you on the show. I wish you'd come back in the future.
Thank you. I would love to.
Now, you got any Occupy events coming up that you can let people know about?
We have the Occupy Student Debt, which is an event that takes place Mondays in Washington Square Park, Wednesdays every week at Zuccotti Park, the original Liberty Plaza. There's a lot of meetings and there's ways for new people to plug in. You can come after the hours of 5:30 p.m. Members of the public will be able to plug into other activities. And, of course, there's always nycga.net, which tells you about upcoming events, OccupyWallSD.org. And we also now have Occupy Wall Street written out in full.net.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so it's Occupy Wall Street written out in full.net.
Correct.
Okay, great. Well, listen, it's been great having you on the show. I requested that I be friends with you on Facebook, so I think that we should try to work together more often and have you on the show. I really appreciate you going back and forth with Paul and you know hopefully
that was painful, my man.
It was. I know, but you know what. I don't know. There, believe it or not, there are a lot of people actually that are listening to the show, we know the truth. You and I know what's up, and it's up to us to educate and inform people. Well, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you sometime down the road.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be right back here in Carson's Corner.
This is an important message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. As the cleanup process begins after a natural disaster, there may be areas of flooding. Constantly watch your children to prevent playing in or around water. It doesn't take long and it doesn't take much water for young children to drown. In many cases, children who drowned had been out of sight less than 5 minutes and were in the care of one or both parents at the time. To learn more, call CDC at 800-CDC-INFO.
Madison Davis.
Renovations in homes built before 1978 can spread lead paint dust that's harmful to children.
Sean.
Don't let lead paint take away your child's future. For a LeadSafe certified contractor in your area, call 1-800-424-LEAD.
What do your status updates say? You're learning a new language? Going all organic? Instead of typing your feelings, what if you could put them into action? By creating a network to help keep kids off the streets, in a country like Armenia, or in Honduras, what if every ounce of your being helped update the status of a person, and in turn they did the same for you? Would this be enough social interaction? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Get interactive at peacecorps.gov/game.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at symradio.com/live.
All right, we're back live here on Carson's Corner. What a great night this was. I had fun. I really did. Thanks to Paul in Arkansas, who is on the chat room now saying he educated my listeners. Listen, call in any time. I don't mind the discussion. I really don't. But, the facts are the facts, and we just got to go with the facts and move forward, really. And again, I don't support President Obama. A lot of the things that we're talking about here tonight are policies of President Obama. Like, for example, extending the Bush tax cuts in 2010. That added to the deficit. The Bush tax cuts from 2010 have probably added close to $1 trillion to our deficit. I think it's like $100 million a day or something like that, the Bush tax cuts add to our deficit. Obama frees the pay of federal workers a week or so before he extended the tax cuts for the wealthy. What is that all about? You're going to punish federal workers and yet you're going to extend tax cuts for the very wealthy. It doesn't make any sense. And, President Obama really has been part of the problem. But it's great. It's great that we can have a discussion towards the end that got a little hairy there. But, we want to thank our guest for the evening. He was just absolutely great. I hope to friend him on Facebook. And, you can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. That's how you follow me on Facebook, and you'll be able to keep up with what's going on. Karanja Kakushi. That was it. Yes, I apologize. I'm so bad at pronouncing people's names. But Karanja was great. He really was. And he's someone that I want to work with in the future. Karanja Kakushi. You can also friend him on Facebook. He actually just confirmed me on Facebook just now. All right. What else we got? You know what? I think that we're going to pretty much end the show here. Okay. You're listening to Carson's Corner on Underground Progressive Radio, 5:30 a.m. and streaming live on Block Talk Radio. I want to give a big shout-out to our affiliate, Speak Your Mind Radio, with David Levitt, who's doing great work when it comes to finding missing children, raising awareness to fight this epidemic. One child that goes missing is one child too many, okay? And, it's something we all need to do. It's part of the public service of America. Okay, public service. Yeah, it's expecting another heat wave here in New Jersey. Probably triple digit weather. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm beat. We all long for hot summers where we can go to the beach and whatnot. But when the actual hot summers arrive, I think I hear a lot of people complaining about the weather, and it's just, you know, I know it's like don't be careful what you ask for, you know. I had a great time. We're trying to get more guests. I wanted to deliver you a guest here tonight because the last, you know, four or five episodes, or probably going back even before that, have just been me talking. And still, thousands of people tune in and download this podcast, which tells me that I'm doing something right. But I wanted to have a guest here mix it up, and we certainly did. We certainly had a great guest, and we also had Paul from Arkansas, Tea Party Paul, who's welcome to call anytime. Big thanks, of course, to Karanja Kikuchi. I hope I'm probably still not pronouncing his name correct. It's just really embarrassing. I'm sorry, folks. There's really nothing I could do here, okay? I have to go back and listen to the correct pronunciation. It's my fault. That's it. You know, you would think someone that almost has a master's degree in human resources and a bachelor's in communication, which are very diverse curriculums, would be able to, you know, correctly pronounce someone's name. I don't know. It's one of these things, you know. I need practice in that area. But I want to tell you too that if you're interested in the sport of mixed martial arts, you can listen to my MMA podcast, which is on this channel. It's also part of CageJunkies.com. Carson's Corner delivers you the very best in MMA news and analysis. And this Wednesday, we're going to be speaking to MFC President Mark Pavlich, who's got another great MFC event coming up in about 4 weeks or so. Diego Lima is going to be on the show, 6-1 prospect. Tim Haig is going to be on the show. We wanted to get Tim Haig on the show for quite some time. And there's going to be another guest. Oh, Mark Pavlich, yeah, himself. So we're going to have three guests from the Maxim Fighting Championship over there in Canada. And speaking of which, we had a caller from Canada before hung up. We wanted to get him on the phone and talk to Karanja. But maybe sometime in the future that person will call back. So, all right, follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And you can listen to this show in its entirety on this website, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Or you can go to my podcast page at bobcarson13.podomatic.com. All right? That's it for this week's edition. Big thanks to Karanja Kikuchi and Paul, Tea Party Paul from Arkansas. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.